The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Biden administration has not learned anything about what's happened in Europe as it relates to a green hallucination. We are following because of Joe Biden's leadership as a nation, taking us off the green cliff. The Biden administration seeks to overhaul this economy to fit its green dream. But I've said this back home, and I'll say it here. As you think about the future of energy in our economy, you can't burn today's bridge until you build and validate the future bridges.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Senator Steve Daines from Montana. And I'll tell you what, this is a story you will hear a lot about in the coming days. I am convinced of it. We are going to be dealing with a new green initiative. And boy, what it's costing the U.S. economy, what it's costing you personally. I don't think people are talking enough about it. And I'll give you some perspective on it coming up. But the president, I don't know if you heard, he's pledged $1 billion. I've never saw an administration who loves to spend more money than this one. And you know whose money it is? It's yours. This is your money. $1 billion more dollars in your tax dollars to go to the United Nations Green Climate Fund. And again, I always say this when I talk about these green initiatives. I'm not anti-planet. I'm not anti-environment. I'm not anti being a good steward of this gift that God gave us. I think we have to be good stewards of it. But I think there's a way to be a good steward of it. And I think what we're seeing here is a false religion rising. People are worshiping at this particular altar of the environment. They want purpose. They want meaning, right? They've turned it into unfortunately, a god. The fund is intended to help developing economies take stronger climate action. And in addition to that, the White House is going to ask Congress for another $500 million for the Amazon Fund and related activities. And the announcement was made at the Major Economies Forum on Energy and Climate. That's an organization of leaders meant to facilitate open dialogue about environmental issues within the context of economic growth. Now, where that money is coming from, that was not really addressed. But on top of that, the president signed a new executive order in the Rose Garden today telling federal agencies, you have to incorporate environmental justice into your mission. Environmental justice. Maggie was saying to me, what does that even mean? You're right, Maggie. What does that mean, right? Here you are telling federal agencies, you have to incorporate environmental justice into your mission. Here's what the White House said. I'll quote him, quote, the executive order will direct agencies to address gaps in science and data to better understand and prevent the cumulative impacts of pollution on people's health. It will create a new office of environmental justice in the White House to coordinate all environmental justice efforts across the federal government. And it will require agencies to notify nearby communities in the event of a release of a toxic substance from a federal facility. Now, some of that sounds really good, right? But I guarantee you, this is going to run so much deeper. You're going to see how these policies begin to infiltrate and affect the policies of organizations that really have nothing to do with the environment. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is going to hear a case today. They're going to be hearing it soon, where a Catholic entity is going to try and convince the judge that it is indeed Catholic. And I know you're saying, what are you talking about? Catholic Charities, right? They're Catholic, right? In the Diocese of Superior, they were told by a state agency that because they serve everyone, and anyone, you're not a religious organization. Now, does that make sense to you? What are you talking about? They said, no, you're not. You're not a Catholic organization. You serve too many people. The agency regulates unemployment insurance and has ruled that the diocese has to pay the state for that insurance rather than a fund for five dioceses of Wisconsin that was set up for that purpose at a much cheaper rate. The agency argues that because the charity serves everyone and doesn't really evangelize, the exemption does not apply. So the state's third district court of appeals sided with the labor agency. The Beckett Fund, good group, right? Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. They're representing Catholic Charities. They're optimistic that the ruling is going to be overturned, but we'll see how that all shakes out. You know, Twitter looks like it will be coming a little freer. A little good news for you. Catholic news agency, I saw a story that they were reporting on this morning. They said that without making a public announcement, Twitter quietly updated its policy on what they call hateful conduct to remove its ban on dead naming and misgendering transgender people, which had, you know, previously been used to restrict critics of the transgender movement. So Elon Musk has taken over and they're not making a big deal about this, but I think it's great. It's a win for free speech. Dead naming means it, you know, using the given name of the person. Like, for example, if you're talking about Caitlyn Jenner, right? You know, somebody might not refer to Caitlyn as Caitlyn, might call him Bruce Jenner, right? Because that's who Bruce was. That's who he was throughout his entire life. Of course, he now identifies as a woman. And, you know, so if you go online and you call him Bruce and not Caitlyn, you know, you could go ahead and be, you could be banned. Not anymore on Twitter. So I have no problem with this at all. Misgendering means calling a person by their biological sex, you know, and that's like saying Bruce Jenner, again, is a real man who thinks he's a woman. You couldn't say that before. You couldn't say that about, you know, Leah Thomas. I don't even know what his name was initially now. It's the only name I really know. Or even Rachel Devine. I forget what his real name is. You know, I mean, if you called them by their biological name, you would have been banned. So Charlie Kirk, Megan Murphy, they can do what they were doing before they got banned by group. And you know, the Babylon Bee, too, of all organizations, right? They got banned. They can post again, given that the transgender assistant secretary for health, Dr. Richard's his name. He goes by Rachel, but it was Richard Levine. He calls himself Rachel. And he got the man of the woman of the war, the woman of the year award, I think is what he got, I think. Something like that. It's crazy. Anyway, you heard earlier this week about the Senate subcommittee. They had a hearing on UFOs. And during that hearing, Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, he's the director of the office in charge of identifying UFOs, he showed a clip of a spherical orb that was flying in an active conflict zone somewhere in the Middle East. And I saw some pictures of it. I mean, there's been some weird cubes that are showing up. They don't have any propulsion, right? They have this ability to move from standstill to Mach 2 or faster. Just technology that we do not have. There was an orb that was found, silver, flying over a conflict zone in the Middle East. And there was a clip taken from the combat sensors that were over there. And it shows an orb crossing at a really high rate of speed from, I think it was top right of the screen down to the bottom left, and that's all they have of it. I mean, it was like flew by. So they're investigating it right now. There's a journalist named Jeremy Corbel, and said it reminded him of something that they saw, which has been dubbed the Mosul orb, where a U.S. spy plane recorded a similar looking orb flying over Iraq in 2016. I don't know what to make of this stuff. Is China, Russia, India, do they have advanced technology that we don't have? It's very possible that they're ahead of us in this area. Could it be intelligent life monitoring the U.S.? You know, one scientist had a theory that a lot of these orbs and cubes and triangles that they see flying in the sky, different craft, are from a mothership that might be out. Are you looking at the video, Maggie? Oh, she hasn't seen it. I thought you were just checking it out. The problem is when these objects show up of crossfire and all the combatants taking shots at it, causing maybe more mayhem than is normally seen in the battlefield. And again, we don't know what happened. There have been reports, I don't know how true it is, of unidentified flying objects or unidentified aerial phenomena flying over missile sites, turning them on, turning them off. You know, we know what happened with the USS Nimitz, right? The big tic tac that showed up off the coast, from our personnel. Maybe it's U.S. technology. Maybe it's some sort of, you know, black ops, some sort of technology that we take out and we test on our own air defenses and our own military. Maybe this is the next technological leap that the world has yet to see. I often go back to the stealth bomber example, invisible to radar, right? And totally different aircraft design. I mean, it was shocking when that thing was revealed. It looked like something alien. So could this be human? Could it be something more than that? I don't know. I heard, you know, one senator who was on these committees looking at these unidentified flying objects say that we could probably explain away, I don't know, 97, 98% of these things, but there is a few that just don't have that explanation. So I don't know. And we'll see what happens. I don't know where you stand on the whole UFO thing. I got a friend who really believes that these are demonic deceptions, that this is not, these aren't anything from this world. And they're not anything alien, but they come from the spiritual realm. There's some people who think that these are interdimensional crafts. Some people believe that they are intelligent crafts. I mean, you know, we've only had, you know, this type of technology for a very, very brief time. And it's a speck on the timeline of the development, perhaps, of other planets that might have advanced civilizations who've unlocked some of the secrets of physics and travel. I don't know. I don't know. I find it incredibly fascinating, though. But we're now capturing this stuff on camera, and there are some theories that go along with it. So we'll see what happens. Hey, I want to go ahead and change gear. I want to get to my next guest. We'll talk a little bit about what's happening also with the Supreme Court. They're supposed to be issuing a ruling today on the abortion bill case that is out of Texas. I don't know if you've been following this at all. A Texas federal judge last week halted distribution of one of two drugs necessary for chemical abortion, saying that the Food and Drug Administration didn't properly test it, and they went ahead and they gave it clearance, even though there were reports that there were, you know, really severe side effects, amongst other issues. So the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals mostly upheld the ruling, and the FDA appealed to the Supreme Court, which was supposed to have ruled on it on Wednesday, but they delayed it until today. And I just can't imagine what's going on behind the scenes there. I mean, you know, just, I can't spend that much energy on it. On top of that, the former president, Donald Trump, came out this week saying that since the Dobbs decision from last year sent the issue of abortion back to the states, then there's no need for federal restrictions on abortion. And I was reflecting on why President Trump would say that. He was, I would argue, perhaps one of the most pro-life presidents that we have ever seen, right? He is, without question, from the time Roe has become the law of the land before its fall, he was, I'd argue, one of the most pro-life presidents in the country. I tend to think this is a president who wants to be back in power. And I think he saw what happened in the midterms with candidates who say, hey, we want to respect life, and there are no exceptions, you know, or we want to respect life, period, right? The pro-life position, unfortunately, has cost a lot of candidates, Republican and Democrat, their seats. So is the president just being a politician here saying, oh, it's back to the states, no need for a federal restriction? So that statement got plastered by a couple of national pro-life groups. Students for Life of America's Kristen Hawkins, she said this. She says, when Roe v. Wade was ended, abortion as an issue returned to the American people. Abortion is a federal, state, and local issue for leaders ready to fight on the human rights issue of our day. Former President Trump seems determined to write a new book, How to Kill a Deal. That's a play on his other book, right? As he signals to those who once supported him that he may not be up to the task of protecting all American lives in law and service. I'm going to argue for the president here. I don't think that's really the case. Yeah, he's saying that. I just think he knows that, you know, he's going to lose some votes if he goes the other way, which is unfortunate. It really is. What do you do? Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, was critical as well. Katie Daniel is the state policy director, and she joins me right now. You can find them online at sbalist.org. Hey, Katie, good afternoon.
Hey, great to be with you.
I am delighted to talk to you. Fill me in. Donald Trump, when he was president, I would argue he was fully committed to the life issue. Michael Pence were eloquent in what they had to say. I really believe he was one of the most pro-life presidents that we have seen. He was the first to show up physically at the March for Life. He appointed justices that he knew would overturn Roe. What do you make of his most recent statement? Is it politics? Is that truly where he stands on the issue? How do you read his words?
Well, you know, we think that he should run on that pro-life record. You mentioned some of the highlights, being the first president to show up at the March for Life. The Republicans will expect that now. The Republicans are the pro-life party. Unfortunately, it's been that way for a while. Democrats have completely abandoned the issue. Yep. He set the standard that we're going to have Supreme Court justices who are originalists, who understand that the court was wrong in Roe v. Wade. We're going to go the March for Life. So he set the standard as a very pro-life president, and he needs to run on that record, not run away from that record. And what we saw in November is that governors who ran on their pro-life records, they did really, really well. They went 12-0. In my home state of Florida, Governor DeSantis was reelected and just signed the heartbeat law. But if you look at Ohio and Georgia and Texas, these are big states. They're states that the left is gunning for. You've got candidates like Beto O'Rourke in Texas or Stacey Abrams who ran as pro-abortion candidates. And the governor said, I'm pro-life. Here's what I believe in. Here's what I stand for. And they won. President Trump can do the same thing if he runs on his record.
So a lot of Republicans seem to be, I think, running scared after those midterms, after the loss in the Supreme Court in Wisconsin as well. That was a pro-life candidate. A lot of people argue that Kelly was not the best candidate. But, you know, we've seen, you know, disappointing results in the midterms. What's the attitude amongst, you know, Republicans? We know, and to your point, I would agree with you. I think the Democratic Party right now is very much pro-death. It's very hard for me to point to any pro-life representative there. What's going on with Democrats? Are they, or not Democrats, but Republicans? Are they concerned that this position is going to cost them? I know you talked about the governors there, but how do you see this playing out?
The lesson from 2022 has to be that when you state your position clearly and early, you can win the narrative. If you talk about, this is what I'm for, this is why I'm for it, this is why I want to support moms and babies, that's a winning issue. When we get into specifics, we win. Because even when people say they're pro-choice, they don't mean the Democratic Party platform of abortion throughout pregnancy with no limits, which President Trump articulated so well in that debate with Hillary Clinton as a candidate. I went back and watched that video, and it's like the clarity he had talking about what a late-term abortion really is, where it just tears that baby up. People heard that and said, I don't support it. Democrats are told by their consultants, don't talk about specifics. When we talk about specifics, we lose. Because the American people, when they get into the specifics, are very pro-life. Yeah. They don't want pills sent through the mail. They don't want pills sent through the mail to minors without her parents knowing, and they don't support late-term abortion. So we have to get into the specifics. We have to say what we believe.
I agree
with you. Because when the left and the media defines us, then we're on defense, and that's when we lose.
No, I could not agree with you more. I mean, we can't really compromise conscience. We can't be quiet because we're afraid of losing. We need to continue to speak the truth. I've seen it from the other side where, you know, those who want to advance the redefinition of marriage or transgender ideology or something, they're bold about it. They're not afraid to come out and speak this, and their voices heard. Soon people either become desensitized or they begin to accept the mantra as a new reality. And I think that's unfortunate. So I think you're right. We need to beat the pro-life drum. We're on the right side of the issue. I think let me ask you this. If the Republican Party fails on abortion in the coming primaries, if they back away from it because they are afraid and they're not bold in their position, what happens in terms of where we are with the fight for life? And quite often at that point, a lot of people say, look, there's enough pro-lifers in the country. We need to start a third party. We need a party that has values and has morals and is willing to stand up for those who cannot stand up for themselves. How do you see those possibilities, if at all?
Well, certainly pro-life voters are a huge part of the Republican Party. I know, Ronna McDaniel has talked about this quite a bit. So I think the Republican consultant class who is saying stay away from the issue, ignore it, do the ostrich strategy of hiding your head in a hole and hoping the question goes away, are setting candidates up to lose. Yeah. And we want to elect pro-life lawmakers. Yeah, that is why our organization was founded, was to get these people into the right roles so that they can advance pro-life legislation. So we're going to keep pushing a winning strategy, which is to define yourself, to connect with people. Yeah. When you say what you're for, people can connect to it. When you let the other side say what you're for, it's going to be a message that you don't want, and you're going to have to continuously play defense and say, oh, no, no, that's not what I believe. And that's what we saw last year when there was nobody giving a clear message on some of these state ballot initiatives or some of these candidates who said, I'm not going to talk about it. They lost.
You're right. My guest today, Katie Daniels, if you want to join me, or Katie Daniel, I should say, if you want to join me, the number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Covina, California first. Katie, Teresa's got a comment for you. Hi, Teresa.
Praise the Lord and bless Relevant Radio and your guests.
Thank you.
I believe that if President Trump wants to win totally through the grace of God, he has to be totally pro-life. None of this incest and rape talk. That God is not pleased with double-minded people.
All right, Teresa, thank you. Let's talk about this. So your thought, Katie, on a lot of people are saying, okay, I am pro-life except in situations of rape or incest or life of the mother. We always have those little caveats that people throw out there. How do you respond to that? And then secondly, what do you think the president's chances are running or winning against somebody like Joe Biden, who I'm pretty confident is probably going to throw his hat in the ring?
It sounds like he's going to announce soon. That's what the whispers have been, for sure. So that will be a conversation about that rematch. You know, this is a really challenging because we never want to say that because a law doesn't go as far as we want to be fully protective, that we're making a moral determination about those babies, right? Every single baby has dignity and value and worth and deserves to be protected. We also have to live in a world of political realities, which can be so challenging. And so, you know, here in Florida, we just passed a heartbeat law. We were at 15 weeks. I can't wait for that heartbeat law to go into effect. Amen. But we don't see that as the end, right? We're going to have to continue to convince people and bring the public along with us to get to a place where our law is fully protective. We wanted to do as much as we could this year and keep it moving forward. And so we're celebrating that win while recognizing that, you know, we won't be done until every single baby is protected in law and valued in our culture.
Katie, I always had that philosophy. You know, it's an inch here, an inch there. Soon you're a foot closer to your goal. You know, so if we can make these pro-life victories incremental, there's still wins, in my opinion. You know, you might win a lot of little battles, but you know, in the end, we want to win the war. Ken in Wisconsin, you are on the air with Katie. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a question. That why do Republicans always promote freedom and less control by government? When it comes to what a woman does with her body, they want to have control over what they can and cannot do. That sounds counterintuitive to me.
All right, good question, Ken. We appreciate you being here. Katie, I'll let you go first.
We don't see this as an issue of control. We see this as an issue of protecting that baby and, quite frankly, mom. If you look at some of what's going on with these abortion pills, sending them through the mail with no medical care, it's extremely dangerous for women and something we're waiting to hear from the Supreme Court on soon. So the framing from the left is that the baby has no part in this. We see mom and baby as equally valuable. We want to protect them both.
Yeah, I couldn't say it any better than you, Katie. And kid, that's where I stand, too. I mean, what the Republican Party is doing, or anybody who stands for life. I mean, if you believe that that's a child in the womb, you should do everything you can to defend the most defenseless amongst us. The woman, you know, often uses, I think, a false argument saying it's my body, my choice. I don't agree with that at all. What about the baby's body? What about its choice? It doesn't have a voice. And it really is about freedom and upholding the dignity of life.
Well, and our researchers at the Lozier Institute just did a study. They found as many as 60% of women say that they felt some kind of pressure when they went into that abortion clinic, whether it was financial, direct pressure from a parent or a partner, an abuser. So for many of these women, they don't feel like they're exercising a free choice. We know that coercion and abuse is a huge part of this. And we want to give women every opportunity and resource to have a flourishing life for her and her baby.
You know, the other thing I think about, too, is and Ken brings up a point that's so reflective. A lot of people share the view, and I'm glad he called in on it. I've often heard people say, look, the government sometimes mandates that you wear seatbelts, right? You know, to protect your body in the event of an accident, right? It's the same thing here as well. We have to, sometimes the government does things in an effort to, you know, protect you. And I think Republicans are trying to do that for the unborn. Katie, I only have a moment for maybe one more call. Let me grab Charlie in Philadelphia. Charlie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Drew. How you doing?
Hey, good.
I don't understand for the life of me how anybody could even vote Democrat anymore. It's just so ridiculous. They're not only pro-abortion, but they just voted against having women's sports for women only, not having transsexual men there. And so they're not even sticking up for women, and women are voting for them. It's just unbelievable. And even more than that, you have a president that couldn't work at a dollar store, yeah, and he's our commander-in-chief. Right, they lead him around. He gets lost. What is going on in this country?
Charlie, let me just – we have a minute, so I want to let Katie respond to this as well. You know, back to Ken's point, too, springboarding off of Charlie. Charlie brought up a really good point here in respect to – you talk about parties, and there's good and bad in both parties, okay? And I want to be clear about that. I agree. I think the Democrat Party right now is a party of death. And I do think in a lot of respects it's anti-women, because when you promote abortion, you hurt the woman. Right. When you allow men to compete against women in sports, you deprive them of opportunity and of really an equal playing field. I think that's anti-woman as well. So, you know, Ken says, why do Republicans talk about freedom and liberty and yet they want to deprive a woman of killing her baby? Right. We're actually trying to protect women, Republicans. And Katie, I would love to get your take on Charlie's points as well, because if you take a look at the Democrats, you champion liberty for women in a lot of respects, your policies are damaging women.
Yeah, the Democrat Party platform right now is abortion with no limits at any time in pregnancy for any reason. And increasingly, it's even harder to prosecute someone when there is known coercion. A few years ago, a pro-life Democrat ran for the mayor of Omaha, Nebraska. Bernie Sanders got on a plane to fly out there to campaign against that person. They have made it clear they will push anybody out of their party who's pro-life. I think it's a huge mistake. Over 70% of Americans say they support a bill that would protect babies at 15 weeks when they can feel pain or sooner, or more protective than that. And yet the party has said, we're going to go with the most extreme 10%. Who will love Planned Parenthood and want more abortions everywhere. And, you know, this should be easy for our candidates to talk about protecting babies, protecting mom from these pills in the mail and saying what we're really for.
Lillian brings up a great point. She's in Ohio listening. Lillian, sorry, I don't have time for your call, but she says the baby's not part of the woman's body. It has its own DNA. I think it's Congressman Dan Lipinski from Illinois, his own party primaried him,
right?
Because he was so pro-life. Katie, I'm grateful for what Susan B. Anthony does. And if people want to check you guys out, sbalist.org, that's the best way to connect, right?
You can check us out too. Lifesavinglaws.com is the website we put together.
We'll be right back. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/Forrester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Be who God meant you to be, and you'll set the world on fire. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thank you for joining me. It's good to be here with you. I love hanging out. Love having a chance to talk with you. We'll pray coming up in about maybe 26 minutes. Right? Well, Chaplain of Divine Mercy is right ahead. In fact, a little bit later in today's broadcast, we are going to talk to Dr. Gahn about AI. So much is being reported on it now, and it raises a lot of questions. I mean, this artificial intelligence has the ability to scrub the web, right? I asked it to write a promo for my radio show, And it was so darn good. It was better than anything I could have written. I mean, it was eloquent. It was on point. It's like it knew, like it listened to the show. It was crazy, right? And did it in just a couple seconds, right? There's no thinking about whether, you know, there's continuity or flow. I mean, just cranked it out. I don't know if, I don't know how much you know about or how much you even follow these things. There's a rap artist named Drake, very popular, right? Very well known. There's another singer, a rhythm and blues guy who calls himself The Weeknd. The two of them have collaborated on songs many, many times over the years. But this past weekend, a new song came out featuring these two artists. And Mike, you got a sample of it? Take a listen to this. If you're familiar with their music, listen to this audio. So there's a little sample of that new song. Came out this weekend, downloaded like crazy. It was on major platforms, YouTube, Amazon, SoundCloud, Tidal, Deezer, TikTok, you name it, right? Well, guess what? They didn't produce it. AI did. It was uploaded on a platform by a user called Ghostwriter 977. 977. Certainly sounded like the two of them. It was actually done by a TikTok user who used artificial intelligence to create that song. A pretty good song, right? That was pretty good, if you think about it. So since so much of what you hear is computer-generated, it wasn't hard for that guy to, you know, and the AI program to mimic their style. So song's got millions of people listening to it. Then on Monday, it was gone. Well, what happened to it, right? Well, Universal Music Group, which manages both of the artists, they had it pulled down from everywhere. YouTube and Apple and Spotify, you name it, no longer there. So Universal issued a statement, and this is what they said. They said, which side of history all stakeholders in the music ecosystem want to be on? The side of artists, fans, and human creative expression? Or on the side of deepfakes, fraud, and denying artists their due compensation? It's a good question, right? Of course, the whole musical business, it's changed. And it's changed drastically over the years. Up until now, the invention of recording devices, musicians got paid by their performance that they gave or by people buying their copies of their music, downloading them, you know. When records came out, they got paid based on record sales. When radio played the music, they had royalties. You know, when the internet came about, people could send their music files, you know, and they'd get paid that way. So it goes on and on. There's advertising revenue. There's a lot going on. What about AI right now? What if you decided to use AI to make a recording of, I don't know, Taylor Swift and her latest song? And how many downloads would you get of something like that? You know, how many fans of Taylor Swift are out there, or whoever the artist might be. I guarantee you, a lot of people wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Maggie was telling me that Joe Rogan does his producer writes his promos or his teases for what's coming up, and then his image is artificially generated. And the video looks like him there. In fact, there's video online of him having a conversation with Jordan Peterson. It's fake. It's AI, deep fake. How can you tell the difference? Right. So it raises questions. Not only can the technology do this, but what about these beautiful paintings that are now created, right? I mean, you see some fantastic art that is being generated. Elon Musk the other day, I was watching an interview with him. He says that soon there's going to be full-fledged, there'll be shorts and there'll be movies. There'll be films that are produced by AI. Because what is it? What is film, right? It's nothing but a frame, right? A still with audio beneath that track, audio, music, whatever it is. And it's a compilation of all those frames. Could AI start making shorts? Can they make movies? Well, they're making still, you know, incredible art right now online. And what about music? So the big question now is, what does that mean for copyright? Who owns it? Do I own it because I told AI to do it? Does OpenAI own it because they manufactured it? If it's done in the style and voice of Taylor Swift or The Weeknd, do they own it? Big question, right? Intellectual property, copyright. Let's talk about it for a minute. Feel free to join me if you want to get in. 888-914-9149. 9149. I'm joined right now by Evan Brown, a copyright attorney at Neal and McDevitt in Chicago. He specializes in this kind of law and is very good at it. It's good to have him with us today. Counselor, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Drew, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. It's really an honor to be here.
Well, I am delighted to talk to you. I'm fascinated by this. Intellectual property in the past, you know, I've written books, I've produced documentaries, and those things are protected, right, by copyright. And, somebody can't just go take my book and go publish it. They can't take my film and take excerpts out of it and upload it and profit from it. Did Universal Music Group have the authority to take down a single copy of the song Heart on My Sleeve when they didn't manufacture it?
Yeah, it's a good question. A lot to unpack there, isn't it? I mean, you raise, I think, implicit in what you were saying there. If you write something and put it out on the internet, presumably somebody's not going to come along and copy that without your authorization. Yep. You know, those are the easy questions. It's much more nuanced, much more challenging to consider what happens when we're using machines to assist in all of this. It really presses the limits and causes us to rethink some of the fundamental notions of authorship, both, you know, what are the rights in the resulting work and what are the rights in the works that go in that are amalgamated together to create all those things. So wish I had a straightforward answer to your question, but therein lies what makes it so fun to talk about, right?
So the person who made the song, Evan, he obviously put some effort into it, even though he or she was using the voices, the unique musical trademarks of the artist. How would you, if say this came before you, how would you go about adjudicating something like this? What are the arguments for both sides?
One thing that's really fascinating about sort of the principle behind the question is that this type of question is not new. I mean, you can look through the history of innovation and the ways that the law has tried to keep up with it. If you look into some of the literature on this now, from the things that the United States Copyright Office has issued in thinking about the questions you're asking and some of the ways that the courts have looked at this, there was this case in 1884 involving a photograph of Oscar Wilde. It's called the Cerrone case is what copyright lawyers call it. And the question was, is a photograph subject to copyright protection? Can a person who just clicks the shutter, I guess it was a little more complex to take a photograph in the 19th century, but, you know, simply speaking, when you click the shutter and let light in onto the film and thereby create an image, you know, is there a basis on which to claim copyright in that? And so ultimately, of course, the answer was yes, that does result in copyrighted subject matter put together. You know, isn't that question a lot like how it is now? We've got these wonderful technologies doing these things with somewhat limited human involvement, resulting in these beautiful works. And so the question becomes how much human involvement is necessary for there to be an author? Such a key concept there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of a head scratcher because I had heard after this technology came out, some people would give, let's say, a plot line, characters, whatever it might be, to the AI and ask it to write a novel, a romance novel or whatever it is, right? And then they'd upload it and they were selling it on Amazon. And I'm thinking, who owns it? I mean, I would think the person who gave it the plot line and the story and just used this machine to do it. It's like, is AI like a typewriter or a computer is? You know, if I'm going to type on the keypad and it generates, you know, everything I want it to do, you know, I don't know. To me, it's very confusing. And if AI can generate its own creative content, I guess who gets paid, right? Should that be free?
The question is, who is the author?
Right.
And, you know, and that's a very specific term of art. It has a very specific legal definition when you're talking about copyright. And if you evaluate that and look into it, all the way going back to the rights that are expressed in the Constitution that give authors the rights in their works, it has to do with originality, you know, the creative spark. Originality in the sense of having originated from the intellect, not that it's necessarily, you know, original and brilliant and captivating, but it has to originate from the human capacity for thought and for expression. Now, the current thinking along these lines, particularly what we're seeing from the Copyright Office and some interesting case law that would be interesting to talk about with animals, we can get a chance to talk about that, is the author must be a natural person. You know, there's this idea of it being something that's human, that is flesh and blood, that right. possesses an intellect and not merely a machine.
Right.
So that does not mean that right. there cannot be copyright created, copyrightable subject matter generated
right.
when humans are assisted by AI, but right. something that is purely created by an AI, the chances of that being counted as copyrightable are pretty small in the current approach.
I got you. Well, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, let's pick it up on the other side. I'd like to hear about the animals as well. But, you know, that yeah. promo that the AI wrote for me, I didn't write it, didn't tell it what to do. I just said write a promo describing the show. Who owns that? All right, Doc, we'll talk about it on the other side. So stay with me. If you want to join us, I'll take your calls too. Our number 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Feel free to join the conversation. We'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today. Taking a look at another aspect of artificial intelligence, and it is coming, and it's coming rapidly. It's going to be a huge part of your life and of your children's life. It will affect jobs. I'm sure new jobs will be created. But what the AI can do right now is pretty amazing, from writing novels to creating art. There was a story that broke of AI creating a kind of a fake Drake song, and it was pretty good. Apparently, it got downloaded. Song was played 600,000 times on Spotify, got over 275,000 views on YouTube. It was shared all over on Twitter, and it garnered millions of clicks. So it was done by a generative AI using, the artist's music or style, if you would. And the question that was raised is, while there are intellectual property issues, how clear is it whether the label or Drake and The Weeknd have a claim under traditional copyright, given that the song in question isn't something the artist ever wrote or they ever sang or they created? Right. It's down right now, but it raises lots of questions for us as well. And I've invited an attorney who specializes in copyright. His name's Evan Brown. He comes from Neal and McDevitt in Chicago and specializes in this kind of law. And we're just diving into both the history of intellectual property and copyright and where it's now going. And we'll take a few of your calls. When I come back, if you're on hold, I'll get you on the air. The number two, by the way, if you want to join us, is 888-914-9149. Evan, I think about people losing jobs and all the rest of this type of stuff. Maggie and I were talking in the break. One of our colleagues had a piece the other day where how AI is now using, using proteins and other things to create new chemistry. I mean, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come into the fore. But when we left off, we talked about animals, and there's always this question of, what happens? Let's say a gorilla takes a picture, right? Who owns that? There's I think a couple of years ago that happened. And you're probably familiar with the one where the gorilla took a selfie and it went viral.
Right.
Fill me in. How does this work when this stuff is outside of human hands?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to sort of contextualize what we're talking about, before the break, we were getting at that question of, what does it mean to be an author? Because you can't really have copyright in existence. You don't anyone to own those rights unless there is an author. And so we're searching for guidance on that question in the context of AI. If an AI created agent, and I put that in air quotes, creates a work, is that AI created agent the author? And if it's unsettled, there's guidance on it. But if we look to sort of the history of how copyright law has emerged over the years, we can find other scenarios where non-human agents were the cause of the creation of the particular work. And you were talking about the monkey selfie case.
Yeah.
You know, this started back in, I think it was in around 2011. There was a photographer named Slater, a British photographer. He was in the rainforests of Indonesia, set his camera down. And one of the local primates picked up the camera and took a selfie, and several of them, actually. And there were a couple of different ways that this one was through trying to get copyright protection in the, you know, registering a claim of copyright. But then there was also some kind of funny litigation that PETA began against Slater when Slater published photos in the book, essentially claiming that Slater, the owner of the camera, didn't have the copyright in the photo, but the primate did. And, you know, it wound its way through the courts all the way up to the federal court, the Ninth Circuit out in California. Take that for what it's worth, you know, the issue was whether or not the primate had standing under the copyright. Could that primate have a claim that the law, the copyright law, recognizes? And it held that it did not, just because the statute doesn't say that animals can claim copyright. Now, that's a slightly different answer, or it's an answer to a slightly different question than some things that the Copyright Office itself has said from a human standpoint. And we were talking about this again before the break. You know, to qualify as a work of authorship, a work must be created by a human being, going back to that notion of, can even a photograph be copyrightable? It's the human agency, the selection of the subject matter, the framing, the light, and all of that stuff. There has to be this human agency involved in creating the work. So yeah, monkey selfies can be instructive on these more current questions that we're considering.
So let's do this. We'll go to the phones, grab a few calls for you. Dr. Paul's got a question for you, Evan. Doctor, hi, you are on the air with Evan Brown.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Mariani. Thank you for taking the call. Couple of points. Catholic standpoint, AI is trying to recreate God and also man and also these proteins. And then medical standpoint, during the COVID, we fed the system with all the medical information even before that. How do we claim the copyright? Because I generate my information, I put it in for the patients, and can I claim the copyright for me?
Evan, that's your area.
Well, gosh, I mean, you know, it's I think we can't get away from this question of, that originality, that spark that is there. Copyright doesn't protect everything that we do. If we just, put a list of items in alphabetical order, there's nothing there that's copyrightable, because those are just facts and, objective, cold objective statements of nature. There has to be something that originates from it's not inaccurate to say it originates from the human spirit, an activity of the soul. I don't think it would be inaccurate to say that must be given expression in a tangible medium in order to qualify for copyright expression. So clearly it's easy to get very metaphysical about these things, getting down to that distinction. You know, what is an idea? What is the expression of that idea? What is a fact of nature? If I'm just writing something down that exists in nature, well, I've got to do it with some kind of original flourish for it to be copyright protection. Dr. Paul, I hope that was responsive to your question.
Thank you. Yes, you did. And my other concern is also, if the AI is going to take over our job, talk about the economic impact throughout the world.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Doctor. Well, go ahead. You go ahead, Evan. Go right ahead.
Well, briefly, because I know this may be something you want to talk about with your guest this afternoon, Drew. I mean, you know, being a practicing attorney, I'm not oblivious to the fact that, you know, my profession will change. It already is changing. The ways that I counsel clients, the way that I draft contract provisions, the way I draft letters. And it's one of those things, I think we need to approach it with the certainly with the appropriate caution that, you know, we'll be talking about more this afternoon, but also with the right enthusiasm to see the positives in the way that this can create greater efficiencies and greater quality, perhaps.
Yeah, I heard the AI, they gave it a test. It passed the bar exam, passed a number of other exams as well. But I see this as a blessing to your industry. You know, you still need somebody who can litigate and argue and think through this, I could see this helping you with contracts or revisions or language. I mean, I see it more of a blessing to your industry than maybe putting you out of business, don't you, Evan?
I do, and you know, I mean, I don't want to see it through rose-colored glasses. Right. I want to see it realistically, but there's, you know, an attorney is also a counselor, and there's a very human element to that, being able to bring in sort of the intangible, emotional, spiritual, the different psychological aspects that come to bear on a situation that can't, I mean, it'll be a long time before the machines, maybe these are the famous last words, but it seems to be a long time before the machines will be able to fully replicate that kind of intangible human touch to things.
Yeah, I wonder what the wagon wheel maker thought when the automobile came around, you know. All those newfangled devices, there's no roads. What are they going to do? Right. They're not like a horse in a carriage. It's crazy how things have changed. But, you know, every one of these technological advances have often opened a whole area of new jobs we haven't even thought of yet. So we'll see what happens. Hey, Evan, I'm up against the clock. I'm about to pray the chapel. I'll remember you and your family and your intentions in my prayers. Thank you for being here with me. And please tell Mr. Biagi thank you for his service, too. I'm grateful for both of you guys.
I shall. Thank you very much, Drew. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I appreciate that, too. God bless you. It's top of the hour. When I return, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Feel free to join me. You can get in now. 888-914-9149.